Hello and welcome to Radio Retail with me, your host, William Madison. This time on the podcast, we speak to Richard Brassey from Barclays on how to make sure retailers are dealing with the issue of flexible payments and responsible lending. But first, our conversation with David Josephs from Meta. In it, we talk all about the metaverse, how retailers are moving into the virtual reality space, and why you need to understand this technology now. We hope you enjoy the podcast. And I'm joined now by David Josephs, Head of Industry for Retail at Meta. David, welcome to the podcast.
Morning. Thank you very much for having me.
So I think this is going to be a really interesting topic. Everyone's thinking about questions around VR, AR. Most everyone seems to have an opinion on the matter. But I also think it's one of those conversations that a lot of people, myself included, don't necessarily understand that well. So let's start this off super basic. What is the metaverse?
Great question. So I think the first thing to say is that the metaverse is not a new concept. A lot of people have only heard about it over the course of the last, say, 6 to 9 months, and especially the day following Facebook's rebrand to Meta. But the reality is the term metaverse was first coined in a book over 30 years ago by Neil Stephenson called Snow Crash. So it's nothing new. What is it? It's a set of virtual spaces where you can connect with others who aren't in the same physical space as you. So I think if COVID has taught us anything, it's that we can find ways to be more present with each other when we're not physically in the same space. So what does that actually mean? If you think about one's interaction with the internet at the moment, you are looking at the internet through a screen. Everything is in 2D. The metaverse will be the internet in 3D. It'll be an embodiment of the internet. Another way of thinking about it is, so every 15 years or so, we see that there is a shift in operating systems or in computing platforms. So there used to be the mainframe computer, that then became the desktop, that then became the laptop, which then became the mobile. So at some point soon, we're due the next shift in computing platforms. We believe that that shift will be the metaverse. And interestingly, along with each of those shifts, we've seen a shift in the way that we communicate. So when the internet first came about, we would communicate through text. Then we got smartphones with cameras. And so we communicated more so with photos. Then currently, video is the main, I guess, medium by which we communicate over the internet. And we believe that with the shift to the metaverse, then we'll shift from video into something that is much, much more immersive. And frankly, for me anyway, very exciting. What it actually looks like remains to be seen. I think the reality is we are, some estimates say 10, maybe even 15 years away from seeing the true manifestation of what the metaverse actually is. So we're very, very, very early days, which makes it really exciting, right?
Yeah. So you were mentioning there the progression from mainframe to desktop to, you know, eventually now at the mobile stage. How then, what's that next bit of hardware, I guess, in terms of accessing the metaverse? How are people actually going to be able to interact with the metaverse itself?
So at the moment, Meta have got two core pieces of hardware. One is a virtual reality headset called an Oculus. You may have tried one on, lots of listeners may have tried one on. It's a full headset that you immerse yourself in virtual reality. And then the second piece of hardware that Meta currently has is called Ray-Ban Stories. It's a partnership with Luxottica. And essentially, it's a pair of really cool Ray-Bans that allows you at the moment to take photo and to take video and then immediately upload it to the cloud or upload it to your social channels. It's not really currently a metaverse experience, but one can see that might be the next iteration, it might be in 2 or 3 generations' time, that those glasses will start to overlay augmented reality and they will become another piece of hardware by which one will access the metaverse. And I think in time, the virtual reality headsets that we've got at the moment, they've come a hell of a long way over the past 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Let's be honest, no one looks cool wearing a virtual reality headset. But over time, they'll get more powerful and they will get smaller. And so it'll become, I dare say, people will feel much more less socially awkward wearing a true all-encompassing immersive virtual reality headset, because it'll be much, much smaller. And you know what? It might just be a pair of glasses, and in time it might be a lens that is in your eye. But for now, we've got Meta anyway, has got two pieces of hardware, virtual reality headset and Ray-Ban Stories. I think the other interesting answer to your question is, how will we access the metaverse? And I think there's almost a continuum here. So at one extreme, you'll be wearing a virtual reality headset. You'll be fully immersed. This idea that I referenced earlier about an embodiment of the internet. So to give you an example, I might be, I might be at an Adele concert in virtual reality. Whereas you might be able to access the metaverse, you might watch the Adele concert on your mobile with the functionality that your mobile has at the moment. So you might be able to see a bunch of avatars in the metaverse watching Adele singing. Someone else might actually just listen to the audio. So each of those is still accessing the metaverse. One is clearly fully, fully immersive. I am in a digital world, in a virtual world, wearing a headset. And at the other end of the scale, one might just be listening to the audio, but it is still accessing the metaverse to one degree or another.
I think that's a really interesting idea, actually, because part of the challenge, certainly for me, when I'm thinking about the metaverse, is the jump seems to be where I am in my world right now. And then this idea that all of a sudden I'll be in a completely different space. So I think it's interesting to think about, especially with the glasses that have the sort of augmented reality element to them, that each sort of step that you can see into that future. Whereas now it's just the idea of flicking a switch and we're all of a sudden in the metaverse seems like a big jump, but I suppose it's more obvious when there are those steps along the way.
Absolutely. And I think it's certainly easier to get your head around at the moment if you think about it as a merging of digital and physical worlds. So this kind of seamless integration between the physical and the digital. So from an AR perspective, you can imagine that you might put on a pair of glasses, you can see the physical world around you as it is, but I might be traveling to a new location that I've never been to before, and the directions might be augmented onto the real world through my glasses. Or I might stop for coffee and I might just get at my messages augmented onto the real world. Or another great use case that I can potentially foresee is I might be talking to someone who's speaking a foreign language, but it's immediately translated and augmented on my glasses into the real world. Or even the Ray-Ban Stories at the moment have got an audio element to them. So again, you can foresee that someone might be talking in a different language and it might be immediately in real time translating into my ear. So those are much easier concepts to understand at the moment. And it's this very real blending of the physical world and the digital world that I'd say is very exciting. And for some people, isn't so daunting as being fully immersed in a virtual reality world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think quite a few people would have been pretty surprised not that long ago to wake up and see that Facebook had changed their name to Meta, which obviously is a serious signal of intent about the direction of the company. So what does that mean in terms of future strategy? Do Meta actually own the metaverse?
Great question. So yeah, no one was more surprised than, I guess, a lot of Meta employees who went to bed one night working for Facebook and woke up suddenly in Europe working for Meta. As you say, it is a real signal of intent that we believe the metaverse is the future of computing. Who owns the metaverse? No one. It's like the internet. Anyone can go and build a web page at the moment. Anyone can go and build an app. There are a set of standards. There are regulations around what you can build. And in the same way, there will be standards for the metaverse. At the moment, there are, I don't know how many, there are a lot of providers of metaverse worlds at the moment. There's Decentraland, there's Sandbox, there's Voxels. Meta have got our own metaverse called Horizon Worlds. There's many, 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 many more. And clearly, over the course of time, there will continue to be more. Which will become dominant? Who knows? It's probably like the very early days of the internet, where there were there clearly still are millions of providers. Which will become dominant in the metaverse? Who knows? Unquestionably, many will fade away into obscurity. But there are some big metaverse providers out there right now. All the big tech players will be leaning into this space. But no one owns the metaverse.
And so let's bring this back down to retail now. We are a retail podcast after all. So how are retailers working in the space at the moment, and what sort of opportunities are brands seeing in the metaverse?
So unsurprisingly, we have conversations all the time with our clients about the metaverse. Almost from the day after we rebranded, a lot of the conversation with our clients shifted to talking about the metaverse strategy. It's very early days. Those conversations are pretty nascent. What the true use case looks like in 10 years' time, frankly, remains to be seen. We, in our conversations with our clients at the moment, many of them will say to us, should I be building my store in the metaverse? My answer is absolutely yes, you can. But I would say one shouldn't limit one's thinking to how we think about retailing currently. You know, you shouldn't apply what you know about retailing and the laws of retailing to the metaverse. This is a brand new technology. It's a brand new space, and it will enable retailers to really push the boundaries. So absolutely, you can build a store in the metaverse. Is that going to be the use case? Listen, it might be. Personally, I think the opportunity at the moment is in really exciting, really wild, experiential. So again, at the moment, I might go into the metaverse, I might, as a consumer, and I might go and buy a pair of trainers at a trainer store in the metaverse, and they get sent to me physically in the real world. They arrive to my doorstep and I wear them. Another opportunity might be that I go to the same metaverse store, but I buy a pair of digital trainers that my avatar wears. So when I am out and about in Horizon World or in any other metaverse, my digital identity is wearing some really cool trainers. They're all absolutely possibilities. However, as I say, I think the real opportunity is in exciting experiential. So if I am a trainer brand, my purpose might be all about adventure. So at the moment, if I want to give consumers a brand experience, there are limits to that brand experience. In the metaverse, there are no limits. So I might be able to take consumers one moment trekking in the Himalayas up to the highest peaks, the highest mountains. And the next moment, we might be in the Amazon, or in the virtual, in the digital, in the metaverse, Amazon, trekking through the Amazon. Then I might be down at the bottom of the ocean. And you can build incredibly exciting experiential opportunities for large numbers of people at low cost, which in the real world at the moment, that clearly there are limits to what you can do. That might be a really bad example, but the point is, I think if you think about the metaverse from a storytelling perspective, for a brand, from an experiential perspective, then the opportunities are limitless. Whereas if you think about it purely from, should I replicate my physical store in the metaverse? Absolutely, yes, you can. There probably will be some value to that. You will shift goods, you will sell stock, either physical stock or digital stock. But I think what we will see in time is a really exciting opportunity for brand storytelling and experiential coming to the fore.
Some of that stuff, I mean, honestly, it sounds pretty amazing, but it's also very futuristic. A lot of people will be sitting at the storefront maybe right now, and it's difficult to see the bridge between those two things. So what are people actually doing now? How are retailers today engaged in the metaverse?
Yeah. So a lot of our clients are leaning into AR and they are leaning into VR. We have done some great work recently with some of our clients in AR. So virtual try-on is a great opportunity. And lots of beauty brands are doing virtual try-on. So with the camera on your phone facing to yourself, then you can easily see, you can try on different shades of lipstick, for example. And we've done that with a number of clients. Then we've done some work recently, some really exciting work with made.com. Real world AR. So this is with the camera facing out into the real world. So they have built hundreds of their products in augmented reality, which enables users to place them, multiple objects, multiple items at scale in their living room. So they can see, what does it look like? Does it fit? Does it fit in this space? Is it the right color? Is it the right shade? And that work has been incredibly successful, both in terms of building brand metrics, brand recall, intent to buy, but also we're seeing a real increase in conversion for people who interact with the augmented reality. They are going on and they are more likely to buy the products. So they're just two, I think, really interesting examples. You can see that, so beauty is an obvious area, home is an obvious area, and clothing is another category that you can immediately see that there are benefits to bridging into the metaverse, to try and augmented reality. So again, virtual try-on, the cost of returns for many fashion retailers is huge. If actually I can try on the clothes in my home in virtual reality and get a sense of whether it fits me, it suits me, then it's a better experience for me and it's a better experience for the retailer because they will cut back in the cost of returns. So those are the areas that some of our clients are leaning into at the moment. And then we're having discussions around opportunities in full immersive virtual reality. So there's a nice example from the States where Wendy's have created what they're terming the Wendyverse. Essentially, it's a nice experiential gaming zone where people can go to the Wendyverse and play basketball. So it's, you know, it's a bit of fun, it's a bit of entertainment, lighthearted entertainment, but brands are experimenting in the virtual reality space as well at the moment.
And so how do retailers that are sort of looking at experimenting in the space, how you mentioned metrics before, I imagine it's quite difficult with the possibilities sort of seem almost limitless in terms of how you can conceive both your own brand and how it would interact with a customer, but then how do they actually judge what success looks like? Or is it just a testing ground at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's a testing ground. The wrong thing to do would be to measure this based on ROI. Brands, businesses are not going to see ROI today. In the future, absolutely they might, but this is, it's an opportunity to experiment. And as I say, I think there's an exciting opportunity with storytelling. You know, the Wendyverse is a good example. They're not going to get ROI from it, but people who interact with it might feel more positively about the brand. At the moment, some of the work that we're doing, for example, with made.com, that is a step towards the metaverse. They measured it both in terms of brand outcomes and conversion. They did see success in both areas. And that's fantastic. And clearly that is what brands want to see. They want to be able to show an ROI. But I think at the moment, the right thing to do is to step into it open-minded, see it as a moment to experiment. The good news is there's time, right? So much of what marketers do is it's fast turnaround and we're planning for the short term, possibly the medium term. As I say, the true manifestation of the metaverse is perhaps 10 years plus away. And therefore, we have time to pause, to reflect, to test, to experiment, to get our strategy right. There's no immediate need to be out there right now. Lots of businesses are. That's fantastic. They will be one step ahead. But I'd say the true manifestation is some way away. So businesses have got a moment to pause, reflect, experiment, test.
I imagine now there's going to be a few people listening that are going to be saying, okay, this is obviously really exciting. Maybe my brand should be thinking about getting involved in some way. But what advice would you have for those kind of people that are listening, maybe in terms of next steps? Or
my immediate piece of advice for anyone who hasn't experienced virtual reality is go and buy an Oculus headset. They're £299. But you need, as a business, you should probably have a number of headsets and you should be using them. You should be trying every app that's out there, getting a sense for what virtual reality is, getting a sense for what might work for your business. And importantly, I think almost most importantly, for you as a consumer, what works, what do you enjoy? Because fundamentally, anything that any business creates in the metaverse has to work for the consumer. So try it as a consumer, test, experiment, enjoy it. It's fabulous stuff. So I'll go and buy a number of headsets, make sure people in your business are using them, trying them, and then start to think about what that use case might be. The other thing, I think when we talk to our clients at the moment about ask them to think back to the shift from desktop to mobile, and we say to them, what would you have done differently? 99 times out of 100, the answer is, I would have invested earlier. I would have invested in infrastructure. I would have invested in talent, and I would have started sooner. If you think back to 10 years ago, many people had dumb phones. People had a smartphone. It was invariably a BlackBerry. You could never have foreseen that you would have been doing everything that you do today on your smartphone. Grocers would never have thought that people would be doing their weekly shop on a smartphone. Never mind Made.com selling sofas on their phones. And hence, a number of businesses didn't leap into the shift to mobile. They paused and they waited. So at the moment, we might not know what the use case is for the metaverse, but it will become apparent. And I think those businesses that invest early, invest in the talent, invest in the infrastructure, will be the ones that win out.
David, I feel like we could keep going for it forever, actually, but we're out of time. So I think that's where we'll leave the discussion for today. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Our thanks to David there for coming on the podcast. We now turn to our discussion with Richard Brassey from Barclays. With the cost of living crisis already upon us, consumers are increasingly looking to flexible payments options to help them buy the products they need. But with increasing regulatory focus on the subject, how do retailers make sure they are being responsible lenders? This conversation was recorded in mid-June, and we hope you enjoy the discussion. And I'm pleased to be joined now by Richard Brassey, Head of Business Partnerships at Barclays Partner Finance. Richard, welcome to the podcast.
I will. Glad to be here.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about flexible payments. As a bit of background, there's been increased regulatory focus on this area recently. And with the cost of living crisis that I'm sure all the listeners are well aware of, flexible payment options are becoming more and more attractive to consumers. But obviously this also comes with some challenges. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today, particularly around how to provide that sort of flexibility while also being a responsible lender. Richard, kicking things off here, how can we support retailers to make sure that the customers can actually afford those purchases and thereby create a positive and sustainable relationship?
Yeah, so we are really well positioned at Barclays. We're a 300-year-old bank, but we have got well over two decades experience, specifically in point of sale consumer lending. So we're well positioned here for sure. Data is really important. We've got a large amount of banking customers in the UK. We've got 24 million customers. Through our acquiring business, we take a high percentage of debit card and credit card transactions in the UK. So we've got a really strong understanding of how customers perform and react and what's going out there in the market. So we can help our retail partners by helping them really understand their customer from a lending profile and align this to the right lending products so they can attract good customers, the right customers, and ultimately give good customer outcomes.
This probably seems like quite an obvious question, but why is it important for retailers to make sure that they're actually being responsible lenders?
So, well, in the main, all retailers maybe have their own FCA permissions and regulations. So obviously they've got to enact with the rules and regulations that the regulator sets down to us. But ultimately it's about being fair to the customer. These are your customers of the future. You've got to treat them right now. If you don't treat them right now, if they had a bad experience through lending a product, they won't come back. They'll go elsewhere and spread that message probably to friends and family as well.
That's very true. I think I've definitely had that experience. Taking a step back to talking about the sort of concrete advantages of offering retail finance, can you give us a bit of an overview, I guess, first from the retailer's perspective, then maybe from the consumer's perspective? And I'm sort of adding a third thing in here as well, but are we expecting consumer behavior to change in this space at all going forward?
So if I take it first from a retailer perspective, I think they are obvious. It helps attract customers in, it allows customers to budget, maybe step up in price to the next product up that they want in the chain. So they're all obvious things. Point of sale financing, as we know today, has probably been around for about four decades. So, it's as old as the hills in some respects. And some of them are similar for the customer. The advantages to the customer, the obvious ones, as I've just said, are budgeting. But that's more than ever important now in the cost of living crisis for them to spread costs of large purchases. You know, maybe it's important now more than ever to retain capital and spread the cost of a large purchase just in case things do change in the future. I think one of the main things as well is it allows customers to buy once and buy well. And even more so now, there's a focus on the environment and reducing CO2 emissions. Green inevitably means more expensive, and finance can help spread the costs. And that goes to help a range of agendas that people are really interested in and are important to them as well.
This is sort of to the point about changing behavior, and this is quite a broad one, so sorry about that. But how are you expecting to see the payment landscape develop in the future, especially, I mean, given what we talked about the sort of worsening economic conditions that we're expecting to see over the next sort of few months?
Yeah, and it's topical. Inflation is in the news every day. The Federal Reserve in America has just announced the largest increase in interest rates in 28 years. It's gone up 75 basis points today. And then the Bank of England will follow suit. Hopefully not to 75 basis points, but I'm expecting it to go up today as well. And that, I think that's going to be common. We've had a benign rate environment for so long. I think that we're going to go through a period of a turbulence, which will obviously impact on the markets. I think regulation is going to change as well. And it has to. You know, the last major regulatory change was in 2008. And just for context, the second edition iPhone came out in 2008, the 3G iPhone. Wow. So look where we are today. So that's just a little bit of a comparison. I also think this will impact the crowded buy now, pay later space. I think it's been well announced that the lenders in this space will have to start registering searches with credit reference agencies. And this will add cost to that element, to that market. And I think that will rationalize the market as well. So I think that'll be the big changes that are coming down the track.
Yeah, it feels like this is a topic that's, I mean, I think we're probably realistically going to be coming back to this a lot, especially with everything that we're seeing at the moment. Consumers just need these different options, really. I think that's where we're going to leave the discussion for today, Richard. But thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
No, great. Thank you, Will.
Our thanks again to Richard for coming on the podcast. If you're interested in learning more about the topic, we at the BRC recently ran a webinar with Barclays explaining things in more depth. You can find a link to that in the show notes of this podcast, and it is free to register. And with that, we come to the end of this episode of Radio Retail. I'd like to thank our guests once again for coming on the podcast. If you want to get in touch with me about future episodes, you can contact me at william.madison@brc.org.uk. If you want to find out more about the work that we do here at the BRC, you can visit us at brc.org.uk. Other than that, thank you once again for joining me here on Radio Retail. Goodbye for now.